Turn to Luke chapter 12. We're going to look at one half of a sentence that Jesus taught at the end of a parable, just to get our thoughts moving today. One announcement before we begin. There's some cords running here on this bottom of the staircase on this side. So for those sending children down to the downstairs Bible class, make sure you use the front hallway or the front stairwell this morning. Luke chapter 12, Jesus just started a parable. I want to go right into an answer that he gave. In verse 41 of Luke 12, Peter said, "Lord, are you speaking this parable to us or to all?" So Jesus has taught, and Peter's wanting a little bit of some clarification. And in verse 42, the Lord said, "Who then is that faithful and wise steward?" That's the question I want us to start with today. Who among us could be considered, would be thought of, in Jesus' estimation, as a faithful steward? A wise steward. Just a real quick reminder of what that word is. It's kind of an antiquated word. Nothing really matches it today. Apples and apples with our working system. But we talk enough about it. Most of us are aware of what a steward was. It was someone who was given the possessions of another. And then they were expected to use them. And use them wisely. Use them faithfully. To use them to the best benefit of the master. That's what stewards were. And there's a lot of parables that taught about them and gives us a lot of detail about them. And when we usually apply it, we will apply it to physical possessions, which is the closest application that we can. Because when it talks about the steward being given talents, in the first century, a talent was literally a monetary form of money. It was like we would call a quarter, a dollar, or what it was a set piece of money. So if we make the application of possessions, that's proper. A lot of times what we'll do is we'll take that word talent and we'll apply that to abilities. Well, our abilities are given by God. We are everything we have, our mind, our abilities to think and read, that's all from God. So let's be thankful for that. That's a way to apply it. Our time, we'll apply it that way. But what I want to ask today is, how often do we think of ourselves as being stewards of our self? We as the possession. We as God's, something God has ownership of. How often, if ever, do we think of it in that way? Turn to Romans 12. And here's, if you might want to put your marker there, we'll come back to this text a time or two. It's a memory verse. It's not something we're not familiar with. But let's do look at it as we apply it to stewardship. Romans chapter 12, verse 1. "I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies." Do we think of ourselves as a steward of our very body? It's a gift from God. We're His possession. Do we think of ourselves as a steward of that? Look in verse 2. "Do not be conformed to according to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you might prove that which is good," and so on. How often, if ever, do we think of us as stewards of our mind? A God-given possession that we have. Do we think of it in that way? We've been conditioned so much to think of the stewardship of stuff and of time and of abilities and so on. What I want us to do today is just twist it just a little bit and consider ourselves stewards of our body and of our mind. And the only way we're going to do this and do it successfully is we're going to have a self-evaluation. We're going to have to seriously look at how we are treating these things. Personal evaluations are not easy. They're not easy at all. And there's these two wide spectrums that we could fail at. For some of us, we're just too blind to see ourselves as we are. The opposite extreme is we're so hypercritical that we just beat ourselves to death. And then there's this thing in the middle, I guess, where we refuse to even do it. We don't even evaluate. We're really good at looking at and evaluating others. Seldom, if ever, do we put the microscope on ourselves. So there's a lot of ways we can miss this. I read an article just this past week. I'm certain it's not a true story, but it's a really cool story. I hope it is true, but I just kind of doubt it. But it's the story of back years and years ago, before everybody had cell phones and so on, and there's a guy that went into a store. He knew this store up at the front had a phone. He did not have a phone at his own house. So he goes up, he asks permission for the phone, and he calls up a man in town. Mr. So-and-so, I just wanted to check and see, if you've got somebody who keeps your grass cut and keeps this done and keeps that done. I was just calling to see. Apparently the answer was, yes, I do. Because the next thing that the man at the register heard was, are you happy with it? He said, yes, I am. Okay, well, thank you. And he hung up. And the boy was ready to walk out the door. And the man at the register stopped him and said, son, I need somebody to cut my grass. I need somebody to do those things that you mentioned for me. And the man and the young boy said, I'm sorry, I have a job. And the guy said, what are you talking about? I just heard you call and ask. He said, no, I'm actually the boy that works for him. I just wanted to know how good I was doing. And I doubt that that's true, but boy, I sure hope that it is. Do me and you, would we make such a call? Are we worried about the work we're doing for another? And so let's talk today about being stewards of ourselves, and let's start with stewards of our body. And this is one of those lessons that can be kind of hard on us, one that might hurt us a little bit, because self-evaluations tend to do that. But let's take the pain if we need to, because we are stewards of ourselves. So let's look at body. That's in verse 1. I beseech you by the mercies of God that you present your bodies a living sacrifice. So first of all, let's recognize what sacrifice was. We know what a sacrifice was under the old law. It was giving something to God. It was offering something up. And you didn't have sacrifice a cow. You didn't have sacrifice a 2-year-old red heifer. You did not have sacrifice the goat. No, it was all. When a sacrifice was made, it was total and it was complete. And what Paul is telling the Romans is, that's what we give to God. Our bodies, totally and fully given to Him. We're made of dust. Ecclesiastes and the wisdom lets us know we're going to return to dust. But me and you are not in dust right now. We're still in the present. We're still in the body. And while we're in it, do we consider, again, that self-evaluation, do we consider the important role that we play in the scheme of things? Do we understand the value we are to God while we're in the body? Because God does not spread His message through angels. God does not spread His message through Jesus Himself. When Jesus came down and talked to Saul of Tarsus on the road to Damascus, and Saul said, Lord, what must I do? Jesus didn't tell him. He sent him to Damascus, and somebody who was in the body taught him. An angel came to Philip and said, go join yourself. Leave Samaria and head off down to the wilderness. But it wasn't an angel that joined himself to a chariot. It was Philip while he was still in the body. You and I have an incredible role in the passion of the gospel because He put it in earthen vessels, and that's me and you. And that sacrifice, the rest of the chapter talks about what our sacrifices are. That's another lesson for another time. But we'll just emphasize today, that's what our body is to be. Turn to 1 Corinthians 6. Again, look at some familiar verses. But as we remind ourselves of these familiar verses, ask ourselves, is it truly said of me? No, Romans 12:1 is not new to any of us. The question is, have we offered ourselves up as that holy and acceptable sacrifice? 1 Corinthians chapter 6, this is not new. In verse 19, he says, do you not know that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit which was in you? And usually we get to this verse, we end up spending the rest of our time chasing all the rabbit holes about indwelling of the Spirit and what it means and what... Do you not know that your body is the temple? What was the temple during the old law? It was the place of worship. That's basically what it meant. A temple was a place of worship, a place where God was glorified. So here's the self-evaluation. Is our body a place of worship? Is our body a place where God is glorified? That's a humbling question. Keep reading with me that last phrase there. You have this body, this body that we have, which you have of God. You are not your own. Keep reading verse 20. You were bought with a price, therefore glorify God in your body. That's what the phrase above was mean. Your body is the temple. It's the place where God is supposed to be glorified. And that's what verse 20 is emphasizing. You were bought with a price, therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. Look how both sentences end. Verse 19, you are not your own. Verse 19, your body, or verse 20 rather, your body, it's God's. The point is, we are stewards. We look at those parables and we look at the parable. Oh, those five talents, oh, they were God's. Use them well. Those two talents, that was God's. Use them well. You know what Paul's telling the Corinthians? Our body is of God. And it's a place He is supposed to be glorified in. And we are not our own. We do not get to make the rules. We do not get to go out and ramrod and do what we want to do. We're not our own. We belong to somebody else. Our body is His. Turn to 1 Timothy 4. And now where the pain starts. 1 Timothy 4. It's not easy to self-evaluate. If we are given these bodies, and these bodies are places where God's to be glorified, and these bodies are not our own, but we offer them to Him, how good are we doing? 1 Timothy chapter 4, an emphasis is being made about the importance of spiritual things, as is so often done. But look in verse 7. Refuse the profane and wise fables, and exercise yourself rather unto godliness. The emphasis is godliness. Verse 8. For bodily exercises profits little, but godliness is profitable to all things. The emphasis is on godliness, the things that are eternal. And the rest of that verse goes on to say that. But what about the point we read over real quickly? Bodily exercise profits little. Don't mean that to say, we usually say, oh, that's of little value. That's not what it's saying. What it's saying is there is a value. It's just for a little while. Because the body's going to fade. The body's going to erode. The body is going back to dust. But there is a profit to that. And here's where we need to make some applications. The spiritual health is more important, but there's a benefit. And we would do well to take care of our body while we have it. Because we're supposed to be offering sacrifices to God with it. And if we don't take care of it, our sacrifices are going to be lacking. And that's the most simple way to put that. We don't just live in a country that is recognized for its obesity and for its lack of exercise and for its indulgence and, to use a Bible phrase, for its gluttony. We don't just live in a country like that. We live in a section of that country that is renowned for it. Nobody cooks like the South. Nobody fries. I love being a Southerner, and I know you do too. I'm thankful for where I live. But we know that the 49th and 50th state of obesity is Mississippi and Alabama, and it just rotates, I guess, depending on the closest holiday. We know where we live. And we can mistreat our body soul to such an extent. Instead of practicing self-control, we practice indulgence. Instead of practicing self-discipline, we practice gluttony. And it's possible that our bodies are just not very healthy. And when they're not healthy, we don't have energy. And when we don't have energy, we want to sit around. And when we want to sit around, we are not doing our part in our role of the gospel. Too tired to visit, too tired to help, too tired to do this, too tired to do that. And it's all because, and here's the scary part of it. Age is eventually going to overtake that for all of us. It's a terrible thing. It's a sad thing to see somebody who has lived their life in the vineyard and worked and worked and worked, and then diseases kick in and old age kicks in and just a lot of those choices get taken away from us. All of us, if we live long enough, is going to wear out. Our body's not made to last. But the problem is that ought not be happening when we're 30. Shame on us. That ought not be happening when we're 40. Shame on us. All things being considered, and diseases and things beyond our control aren't at effect, that ought not be happening in our 50s. A lot of it we are the cause of. And then we feel okay about what we don't do. Oh, I'm just so tired. I'm just so worn out. If that's because we haven't been good stewards, now, if it's because of disease and age and frailty, we serve a compassionate, merciful God. And we'll be judged on what opportunities we did take care of. But if it's because we have failed in our stewardship, let's not just brush that under the carpet and pretend we are not at fault. We are expected to offer ourselves as a sacrifice. Are we doing that? We have one body, and unlike our car that gets worn out and dented and messed up, we can't trade it in. So take care of it so we can present it as the sacrifice that it is. Now go back to Romans 12. Because he doesn't just talk about the body, he talks about the mind. So let's read verse 2 again. Self-evaluation, however painful that it might be, do not be conformed to this world. Don't be fashioned like this world, but be transformed, be changed. Become something different than the worldly things around us. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Our mind, an incredible gift from God. And by the way, verse 2 is talking about thought and reason and intellect. It's not talking about emotion. It's talking about thought. And when you think about the mind, the human brain itself, what a useful gift that it is. And I don't even know all the words we can describe it. That's how we learn. It's how we think. It's how we articulate. It's how we comprehend. It's how we analyze. It's how we do so much. With it, we do amazingly great things. And it's not at all an exaggeration to say that the human mind, the human brain, is one of the greatest testaments to a creator. It's one of the greatest testaments to the validity and the certainty of Scripture. But here's the question. Here's the stewardship. Are we busy about that renewal? The renewing of our minds. The idea of making it new. Turn to Philippians. We won't turn to that. That's enough memory verse. We'll remember it. But whatever things are honest, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are, and then it goes on, think on these things. Are we constantly trying to renew our mind? Are we constantly trying to transform it from something different from what we see and hear and experience in this evil world? Or do we just kind of take it for granted? And do we kind of think, well, since I'm not as bad as that, I'm okay. That's not what it said. A sacrifice was not half. A sacrifice was complete. This conforming, don't be conformed to the world. Just because we're not as conformed as another doesn't make it okay. He gave us the contrast. Don't conform, but transform. And that's not a halfway thing. Do we waste the potential? I guess here's where the self-evaluation can hurt. do we waste the potential that God's given us with our mind? Do we never challenge it to its capacity? Turn to Proverbs 14. Let's look at the wisdom for just a minute. Proverbs 15. I said 14. I'm sorry. Proverbs 15. Verse 14. We looked at this passage not very long ago for a different reason. But Proverbs, the wisdom has a lot to say about knowledge, the value of it, how great it is to possess it. Some of the verses talk about the work it takes to obtain it. It's full of them. We'll just look at a couple. Proverbs 15:14, the heart of him that has understanding seeks knowledge. What that basically says, if you reverse it, if we're not somebody who appreciates and seeks knowledge, the simple truth is we're just not very smart. The understanding heart seeks knowledge. So what that tells us in reverse is if we're not seeking it, if we don't appreciate it, if we don't value it, we're probably not as near as intelligent as we think we are. Turn to chapter 20, verse 15, looking at the value of it. There is gold and there is a multitude of rubies, but the lips of knowledge are a precious jewel. He said, there's gold and there's silver and there's all these valuable things, but there's nothing that's as precious as wisdom, knowledge, understanding. And so here's the self-evaluation. Are we still busy about seeking that? Are we still busy about obtaining it? I'm glad we live in the time period that we do, the technology that we have that makes knowledge so easily to find. Me and you, what used to take, for those my age and older, what took weeks, if not months, to get term papers figured out. And all those, you know, those things that you had to write in school and in college, it took months to research all that stuff. It now takes about 30 seconds of copying and pasting. Information literally at our fingertips of almost any realm you can imagine. But here's the question. How much of that, how much of our time is really spent when we are looking at the phone and doing searches? How much of it is spent on things that's going to lead to wisdom? I've told this story before. I'm sure I have. But it made an impact on me. And because of that, it might be of some good to you. He's not a friend. That would be a mistake, but we're acquaintances. We know each other. One of those you run into every 2 years. But he spent some time preaching in Africa. I don't know what nation in Africa, but he spent time in the intercontinent, the jungles part of it. And he made some friends, and they let him come in. We're talking about the parts of Africa where ancestor worship still practiced, where literal idolatry still practiced. And he talked about a family that let him come in to one of their services. And he said that in the what we would call the living room, I guess, they had a mantle, and they had this literal idol sitting on it. And he said they all just sat there and just stared at it. And he just, after a while, he just kind of looked around. He just kind of strange. They just stared. I don't know how long he was there, but he comes home. And the day he comes home, after having been gone for weeks or months or however long, excited to see his family, everybody's back together again. And he said that night, they sat down and they're watching the TV. And he said he looked around and we were doing the same thing they were doing. He said the whole family was staring up at this thing on the mantle. And I'm glad we live when we live. And all of us are advantaged to have the things that we've got. But they can sure kill time. And a lot of that time is not really, all of us have the need to recreate, the recreation side of ourselves. Remember, the physical body, there's an advantage to that for a little while, to take care of it. We need that. But we just need to self-evaluate of how much time we're given to things that do not increase our mind because it's a gift of God. It's not chasing after knowledge. Look in 2 Timothy 4. I don't know what all to make of this other than just let's take it at face value. 2 Timothy chapter 4, as we well know, Paul is about to die. And he knows he's about to die. And he's already talked about being offered up. He's already talked about the incredible reward that he is looking forward to. He is not scared. He's facing death with eyes wide open. He's already seen a man in the flesh when Jesus came back to him. He knows death is not the end. He's not afraid of dying. But it's interesting that in those last days, those last months, however long he's got left, look in verse 13. He's writing to Timothy, and he says, "Here, I want you to do some errands for me. I want some things done for me while I'm here in prison. I can't do this for myself." And in verse 13, he says, "The cloak that I left at Troas, when you come, bring that with you, and the books." I don't know what those books are. I think with all the knowledge that we have of Paul and all the things that we have, the information that we have, I wonder if some of those books would not have been scriptures. Some of the older translations talk about the, instead of it's been translated as books, what it really says is bring the scrolls. Here he is facing death. It's imminent. And he's still wanting to read some things. He's still chasing some knowledge. What an incredible lesson that is to us, because this is an inspired man. He knows things from heaven. Bring me some books. We have one mind and we have one body. And again, the question, the self-evaluation is, when's the last time we stretched our mental capacity? When's the last time we decided to go a little farther? Let's take care of our mind, take care of our body. We are stewards of it. We are not our own. We are offering up sacrifices. We are transforming ourselves. And so use them to be the best teacher we can be. Use them to be the best servant we can be. Use them to be the best apologist, the best answerer of questions that people may have of us about spiritual nature things. Be the best apologist we can be. Remember that we are examples to others. Use our body and mind to be the best of that. That's our role. That's the steward that we are. It is a sad and it's a discouraging thing when we see people we know whose body melts away on them. We hate it. Sometimes it's not the body, sometimes it's the mind. We have all had family members with the ravages of Alzheimer's. But me and you are not there yet. And so while we're still in this flesh, before we go back to the dust, we're stewards of body, we're stewards of mind. Make sure we are faithful and wise at it. Get your songbooks out. Easy invitation, huh? What kind of steward am I? How am I using these incredible blessings that's God given me of mind and body to conform, to transform, to work, to serve, to sacrifice? How good am I doing? How good are you doing? If we need to make anything correct, do it while we stand and sing.